This is an ABC podcast.
Good afternoon, Nikolai Bailhart's with you for the Country Hour. On the program today, more charges have been laid over new alleged breaches of the Water Act in New South Wales, with offences being discovered across the state. Irrigators have been charged over broken meters, illegal pumping, and even over the building of illegal levees. So I'll bring you more details on that today. Also on the program, the ups and downs of having your charity appear on national TV. Need for Feed made it onto one of the commercial network's main breakfast shows. As a result, the donations have been flowing in, but the cost of feed, as you've been hearing, is going up. Some more on that too.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
To start today, though, farmers in Australia are divided over a US court decision that's ruled weed killer glyphosate did cause one man's cancer. The chemical company Monsanto has now been ordered to pay millions of dollars in damages. As Jess Davis reports, the decision could have massive ramifications for agriculture if restrictions are imposed on glyphosate, or Roundup as it's commonly known.
Trolley Snape is a farmer from central Tilba on the New South Wales south coast. She was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2010. She says her oncologist called it a farmer's cancer.
Well, he said that my particular type of cancer was caused by chemical. He said he couldn't prove that himself, but he said from what patients that he has, there is a link to chemical sprays that are on a farm.
He said either it's your fertilisers you're using or your chemicals. At that stage, no one had the link between glyphosate and this particular lymphoma.
Trolley and her husband Ron Snape now believe her cancer was caused by glyphosate, or Roundup, the most commonly used herbicide in the world. In 2015, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, part of the World Health Organization, found the chemical is a probable human carcinogen. That report has been met with heavy criticism, and claims it causes cancer are still contentious. But over the weekend, a US court ordered global chemical giant Monsanto to pay $289 million US dollars to a former school gardener who is dying of cancer, after a jury in California found Roundup contributed to his illness.
This case was historic. Every major known human carcinogen had a moment like this, a moment when the science finally caught up.
It's a case Trolley Snape has been watching closely.
It will be a wake-up for the rest of the world to be very, very careful with what they're using on their farms.
I think it's brilliant. That can only happen in the United States, where one small bloke can take on a massive chemical company like Monsanto.
US journalist Carrie Gillam has written a book revealing documents that she says show decades of tactics aimed at manipulating science, arm-twisting regulators, confusing consumers and silencing critics.
Well, what you see when you look at the documents is that there has been a very carefully orchestrated plan by Monsanto and others in the chemical industry to suppress evidence of harm that is associated with glyphosate.
But she says the science is still inconclusive as to whether glyphosate does cause cancer.
I don't know that there is a definitive answer. Our very best cancer scientists drawn from around the world have said it's a probable human carcinogen. So that's not a definite yes, it's not a definite no. It's a warning sign that says we should be very precautionary in how we use this.
The former Reuters correspondent says this is a bellwether case.
That, you know, could create a snowball effect where Monsanto might be looking at maybe $1 billion or more in damages from these lawsuits. You know, this could turn out to be, legal experts say, very much like tobacco litigation.
But Monsanto say they will now appeal the verdict. Vice President Scott Partridge says the product is safe to use.
So there is no authority whatsoever that has ever found any association between glyphosate and cancer. It is completely safe.
Mr. Partridge says the world needs glyphosate to feed the masses.
And now is not the time for activists to be trying to take a valuable tool out of the hands of farmers.
Ron Snape agrees farmers need to be able to continue producing food.
We are definitely going to have herbicides to actually feed the world's population. But in saying that, we have to have right education so we are protecting the farmers.
Mr Snape wants action to be taken here in Australia.
I'd like to see our government step up to the plate. Let's protect Australians, let's protect people and farmers in this country.
He wants warnings on all glyphosate products.
People can go and buy it in the hardware shop and they think it's safe. They've been told it's safe. Well, put a warning cigarette packets.
Other farmers have taken to social media to defend the use of glyphosate in this country.
Glyphosate keeps your food cheap and safe. Glyphosate allows more food to be grown with less water. Glyphosate helps preserve earthworms and the healthy soil they live in. Please retweet if you want these things to continue.
National Farmers Federation CEO Tony Marr.
When these decisions come up, we have to examine them and make sure that we are absolutely clear on what the findings of that court decision are. We don't always want to pretend that there isn't any risk from using any product. If there are risks, we need to understand them. We need to monitor them and make sure that they're not causing harm to farmers and or products that are produced. So it's an ongoing conversation, but right now, my view is that glyphosate is not a carcinogenic and doesn't pose a cancer risk to humans.
That's CEO of the National Farmers Federation, Tony Marr, ending that report from Jess Davis. The Australian Pesticides and Veterinary Medicines Authority says it won't be reviewing glyphosate and says that it is safe to use in accordance with the safety warnings on the label. So I'd be keen to know from you, this has been discussed, but to expand on it a bit, do you need glyphosate? How important a farm chemical is it? Pretty basic question, but I'd be keen to hear your answers to it. 0467 842 722 is the text number. Do you need glyphosate at your place? 0467 842 722. Well, the Victorian Farmers Federation Grains Group President Ross John says that glyphosate has revolutionised agriculture since it was introduced in the 70s. He says that any decisions based around its regulation need to be based on science, not emotion, and cautions that alternatives to glyphosate are more toxic.
The interesting thing, I guess, is I always look to the scientific proof. And so far, no one has actually ever been able to prove definitively what these cases have been ruling. So I just wonder whether the science and the emotive part of people's judgments are actually disconnected.
Do you think there's too much of a focus on glyphosate and too much of an emphasis on it being toxic when we know that there are other chemicals used which are more toxic, and chemicals that would replace glyphosate in a scenario where it was banned are potentially more toxic?
Well, you certainly should look at the toxic rating of agricultural chemicals, and that's freely available. And in Australia, the glyphosate is rated at a very, very low level. And the regulator, as far as I'm aware, reviewed its approval in the Australian marketplace only recently and have reapproved the continued use. So I personally would trust the Australian regulator in preference to independent judgments made by people that maybe don't have all the facts.
If glyphosate was banned and farmers had to rely on alternatives, what are those alternatives and would they actually be more toxic than glyphosate?
Okay, well, personally, I'll talk from my personal experience. As a replacement for glyphosate, paraquat is a chemical that's used in agriculture. I personally dislike using paraquat, although I do use some. The toxic rating is significantly higher, and the precautions that are required to use that chemical are significantly higher than Roundup.
Do you think these decisions in other countries are going to have any flow-on effects to Australia? And do you think there is any momentum in Australia to review the status of glyphosate?
So again, I will reiterate, I'm more than happy to lean back on independent scientific assessment. I trust the integrity of the Australian scientific system and I trust the integrity of the Australian regulatory system. If evidence does come to light, I'm sure that those very trustworthy authorities will make the appropriate adjustments as and when required.
Mercado market analyst Andrew Whitelaw says research has been done to demonstrate the immense value of glyphosate to the global economy. He says he's confident the Brazil decision will be overturned, but he's concerned about the implications of the US case.
There has been some research done by some academics out of the US looking into what would be the global impact of an outright ban on glyphosate. And it talks about there being around about $7 billion initial loss to the global economy. But then it also talks about global soybeans dropping production by about 17 million tonnes, corn down by about 3 million tonnes, and canola down by 1.4 million tonnes. And even on top of that, it talks about additional cropping area required to bring new land into cropping to take into account the loss of yields. There's also an environmental impact, and they estimate that if glyphosate were to be banned, it would be roughly equivalent to adding an extra 12 million cars to the roads. So we're talking about something that doesn't just impact farmers, it actually impacts the wider environment as well.
And of course, that's at a global scale, but many of those figures would translate on a relative scale here in Australia.
Correct, yes. So glyphosate is one of the most common herbicides in Australia, and it's instrumental in a lot of our minimum-till and no-till environmental farming practices.
We've seen two major decisions internationally which have created this discussion around glyphosate, one of those being Brazil's decision to suspend the use of glyphosate. But you feel that that suspension will only be short-term?
My view is that that will be overturned relatively shortly. We saw the same sort of action in February of this year, where on the Friday, a judge banned live export, and by Monday afternoon, it had been turned around. Brazil is a huge producer of corn and soybeans, so I do not expect that the government will keep that ban in place because it would have a dire impact on their ability to produce crops.
You're more concerned about this court case in the United States?
It is a worry, and I think it causes concerns with the general public because they don't understand about glyphosate and its safety. They just hear that it's causing cancer, and that can cause a bit of an issue, I guess, with our social license as croppers. When we look at the body of evidence out there and the research literature, glyphosate is a safe chemical.
That's Mercado analyst Andrew Whitelaw speaking there with Angus Furley. A text through on this issue from Andrew in Northern Victoria, dryland and irrigated grain grower. Very to the point, Andrew says, we cannot farm without glyphosate, period. 0467 842 722 is the text number. Whether you're concerned about these developments overseas and what it means for glyphosate, and I guess too whether you're concerned about the use of glyphosate. 0467 842 722 is the text number.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
It is 17 minutes past 12. My name's Nikolai Bailharts. Well, more charges have now been laid over new alleged breaches of the Water Act in New South Wales. Offences have been discovered across the state. Irrigators have been charged over broken meters, illegal pumping, and even over the building of illegal levees. Grant Barnes, the Chief Regulator Officer of the Natural Resource Access Regulator, says he's travelled widely to meet up and speak with concerned farmers and communities.
Certainly have. We've been literally out and about, walking north, south, east and west of the state. There's that song, isn't it, that I've been everywhere, man, and it's been ringing in my head as I've gone from Albury, Yanko, down the south, out west to Bourke, across to Moree, Narrabri, Tamworth, Walgett, and all parts in between.
And are there any particular hotspots that you've been focusing on?
Certainly a focus out in the Barwon-Darling area. There was allegations made of water theft within the last 12 months, and it was important for us as we were establishing our presence to get out there and talk with landholders and get a feel for how they see matters.
And we've heard that there have been some charges laid against the Harris family and the Barlow family. Do we have any updates on any more charges or any more charges likely for other offences that you know of?
So I'm restricted to how much I can say because matters are before the court, but NRA have laid charges in the Land and Environment Court against a number of parties. Allegations against the Water Management Act and taking water while metering equipment was not working. And we've also got some matters before the local courts, again, offences allegedly committed under the Water Management Act for controlled activities on waterfront land. And another charge for giving false and misleading information to a warranted officer. Now, those charges have been laid over the last couple of weeks, and we expect them to come before the courts in the coming weeks and months ahead.
So they're not actually before the courts yet. You've just given people notice that they're to appear in court and answer those charges.
That's right.
So they're fresh charges. And are they all relating to the Barwon-Darling area or anywhere in the state?
So they're widespread. There's a concentration of matters in the Barwon-Darling, but also some down in the south. And these are the ones related to activities within a waterfront area without required approvals.
Because in the past, in the south, I remember several years ago, we heard about earth-moving works occurring in that sort of area, channeling of water and that sort of thing that was picked up by satellite maps. Is that the sort of thing that we might be looking at here, something along those lines that's been picked up?
That's right. Look, so what I've seen in my travels of the state are the issues confronting NRA are quite diverse. In the Barwon-Darling area, they are matters of allegations of water theft, but down the south, there are concerns that activities have been undertaken in close proximity to a watercourse, earthworks, like you mentioned, construction of levees, and they've been done without the controlled activity approvals that are necessary.
Have you had to walk softly and carry the big stick, or have you actually needed to get, as you famously said several months ago when you first started, that there was a bit of mongrel in you? Has the mongrel had to come out recently?
I think the laying of charges most recently shows that we do have a bite. There is a bark to NRA, but most of our engagement has been on the softer side. We've found that landholders we have dealt with in the majority are welcoming of our presence and are seeking simple guidance on how they should do things, and most respond willingly to that guidance. I mean, it's our job primarily to make it easy to comply, and we can do that through a variety of forms, through the information we provide over the internet, through the advice that we give in person. It's only really in the small number of cases where we have to take tougher action and the stick gets wielded.
Because I would imagine there would be people that are confused. Water is confusing. Water licences are confusing for a lot of people. I would imagine there'd be people that are making mistakes, getting it wrong, and actually, I know ignorance of the law is no excuse, but still there needs to be some leniency there when it's pretty complicated anyway.
That's right. Look, coming up to speed as I have in the 100 days that I've been on board, I do acknowledge that the water regulatory regime can be complex for some, and people do make genuine mistakes. And that's what you weigh up as a regulator when you're contemplating what action to take. And as I said before, most times that action is to simply be helpful and to point people in the right direction. And in most cases, people respond to that advice. It really is only in the minority where the stick comes out.
That's Grant Barnes. He's the Chief Regulatory Officer of the Natural Resource Access Regulator. Speaking there with Michael Condon. Heaps of your texts coming through on glyphosate. We've been speaking about that. Roundup, of course, commonly known as, with a big court case in America, has found in favour of someone who says it did cause their cancer. Gavin has been in touch. He says, I'm a fan of glyphosate as a weed killer. However, I'm not a fan of glyphosate-ready crops. I don't want to eat the stuff, just spray my weeds with it. Another text saying, first used glyphosate in 1975 with no medical issues. Without it, the country would be a dust bowl. One more person saying maybe being so reliant on Roundup has put us in this position. I think it's ridiculous that anyone could think there is no other solution. And Kelvin from Murrayville as well saying farming certainly would be challenging without glyphosate, but some alternative chemicals are far worse. 0467 842 722 is the text number.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
Well, as you've been hearing, national hay stocks are at rock bottom levels, largely because of the drought, and livestock producers are now hoping that new season crops could be the saviour, producing plenty of feed, but they shouldn't expect too much to come from the Northern Mallee. The region is enduring an exceptionally dry season, and many hay crops, we're being told, may not even make it into a bale. Swan Hill hay contractor Kobe Pierce says the season is the worst he's seen.
Yeah, well, the season's not looking too good back at Swan Hill, so we're over here trying to find a little bit of business. further into the South Australian border and down into the Wimmera, where it's the season's a little bit kinder.
Right, so around Swan Hill is looking pretty tough?
Yeah, very tough. It's probably the worst I've seen it in my lifetime. Some of the older farms are saying worse than 1982.
And what's that going to mean for haymakers like yourself?
Well, it's going to be a tough season trying to find hay, but it's just lucky the product is actually worth something up into the drought areas of New South Wales, which might push a few farmers to cut hay rather than harvest grain, but then we're up against the grain prices strong too at the moment.
Right, so if the season does sort of fizzle out, you think there could be a few blokes who'd be looking to cut wheat and barley for hay that they would have planned to take through to harvest?
Yeah, possibly, especially if there's frosted crops. We do a lot of, if we get late frost and the crop's not going to make full potential, you'll always make more money out of doing it as a hay crop if you've got the bulk there.
But those traditional hay crops, I guess, are particularly vetch, they're not looking too flash?
No, I don't think we'll do one bit of vetch locally in our area this year. Every crop has pretty much failed, so that's going to be a bit of a premium product if you've got it this year.
So how are those vetch crops looking? They just haven't grown?
No, they're not even as high as your toenails yet. They're probably, I'd say, 2 months behind.
Right, so you're looking at travelling further afield than you usually do to get business this year?
Yeah, that's right. We've got some pretty substantial contracts with feedlotters up in New South, so we've just got to find them the product and go as far as we have to find it.
How is business looking for this season? Are you fielding many inquiries from prospective customers?
Yeah, we are. We're getting asked a lot of questions, especially straw. The straw market's pretty strong at the moment because there's no hay and the feedlotters love straw. Yeah, so we're going to be chasing as much straw as we can find to supply our regular clients.
You've got a fair bit of machinery here with you today, including a steamer, which is becoming a more common sight in the hay industry.
Yeah, we purchased that last year. It's been excellent for our business, and every client so far has been wrapped with it, where we can just go in and bale. We're not sitting around all night waiting for dew. The feed tests are actually coming up better with the steam because it's releasing the goodness out of the hay. It's pretty much more than doubled the production of the one baler in the last season. So it's been, yeah, priceless to our business, really.
It produces an artificial steam, which means you can bale during the day when you normally can't?
Yeah, that's right. It puts steam under the windrow, on top, wherever you need it. You've got four places where you can put the steam. And, yeah, we can just keep baling into the day up till the ambient temperature gets to about 26, 28 degrees, because you've got to be careful you don't make the bales too hot.
Are you confident about the future of the hay industry? Because you're certainly investing in machinery, so it would look like you feel like there is a strong future for it.
Yeah, certainly. The export business going over to China and Asia every year is just growing. Last year they broke the million tonne barrier for exported oat and hay, and that's just oat and hay alone. There's straw and other products that get exported as well. But every year they're saying that grows about 20%.
So a lot of the oat and hay that you make for export, that goes to the new facility there at Ultima?
Yeah, that's right, Mallee Hay. They're into their second year of production now, and I think this year they're chasing about 80,000 tonne, which is double what they did last year.
So has that encouraged more people to grow oat and hay?
Yeah, it does. All the numbers seem to stack up. The last 2 years that's been running, all the farmers said their best gross margin out of all their crops was the export hay job.
Clearly it's going to be a tough year for vetch hay, but how about oat and hay? How's it looking?
There is some good crops as you go further south and west, but locally around Swan Hill, some crops might not even get cut because I don't think they'll make it.
And coming over to Speed today, does it look much better over here than it does in the Swan Hill region?
Yeah, it's substantially better. I'd say it's still not as good as it could be here at Speed, but it's looking better than Swan Hill.
That is Swan Hill hay contractor Kobe Pierce speaking there with Angus Furley. Heaps more of your texts coming through on glyphosate. One person says, as with any chemical use, you need to adequately use safety precautions, gloves, masks, those kinds of things. Another person says, you could jump in and out of a mixed up tank of Roundup and then shower off and you'd end up a bit crook. If you did the same thing with the paraquat based chemical, you wouldn't make it even to the shower. Which chemical would you rather use? And Lizzie says, we're a lazy society. We prefer to use poisonous weed killers rather than a mattock. kind of like a pickaxe. 0467 842 722 is the text number if you'd like to get in touch. It's 29 past 12 here on the Country Hour. Well, a national disaster relief charity has more than quadrupled the amount of feed that it's buying for drought-stricken farmers since appearing on national TV in recent weeks. Need for Feed has now raised hundreds of thousands of dollars. Western Victorian coordinator Adam Meek says they're now facing an increasingly competitive market, which is, of course, driven by soaring hay prices.
Our donations have just gone absolutely through the roof. A lot of people from all walks of life, from people that live in the middle of the city to people that live in the outback, are sending us donations. They've just gone absolutely ballistic.
Can you put a rough number on that?
We're talking in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
How much of what you're sending up now is hay? How much are you actually now looking to alternatives?
Started to look into alternatives. I sent a load of watermelons and pumpkins up to a farmer at Goulburn this week. Started to branch out as the hay supplies are starting to dwindle.
What kind of stock do we have left in Western Victoria?
I'd say very minimal. Some of the stuff I've been buying is sort of a season to two seasons old. Can't be too picky nowadays, and with the prices the way they are, you've just got to be realistic and be prepared to pay for it.
Is there going to be a point where we don't have any more to give?
For sure, and that point is coming very soon, I believe. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, and we've actually started sourcing hay from interstate now just to try and keep things ticking over, but even they're running out of supplies, as most of it's already gone north too.
Are we talking about weeks or months?
I think we're down to the weeks.
There's been a lot of criticism of the way that the media is covering or that the people in cities are responding to the drought. What's your take on that? And are you able to give me a sense of what level of fundraising you are at before the media momentum really got going and where you're at now where you say you've raised hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Before the media really grabbed hold of it, no one really had heard about us. We had Sunrise come down and they did a story on us, and that was really the kick in the guts that we needed to get people's minds ticking over about this drought, and that's when the donations really started rolling in. From those donations, we've now been able to, instead of buying one or two semi-loads of hay, we've been able to ring up people and tie up 400 or 500 bales at a time without having to worry about it too much.
So if you can compare before you really got that traction and national recognition to what you've got now, is it two semi-loads and overnight it's now four, or can you put that in a comparison for me?
Previously I was buying sort of 100 bales at a time, or 120, which is about three semi-loads. Now we have the capacity where I can ring a fella up and say, well, look, if you've got 500 or 600 bales, I'm quite happy to buy them and pay for them. Unfortunately, it does have a detrimental effect to the hay prices. As you buy it, then the stocks are running a bit lower and a bit lower, and then the prices tend to go up again.
Is there a need to be a little more proactive with those alternative feeds and preempt the end rather than work our way down to the last bale?
Oh, we definitely do. We need to be looking at alternative feed basically yesterday just to really get on top of it, because this drought's not going to break anytime soon.
We've got Palmer for a Farmer, sausage sizzles. How is that helping Need for Feed? Where is that money going?
The sausage sizzles and the Palmer for a Farmer, most of that money doesn't actually go to Need for Feed. My own personal opinion is that it should be split up between the main ones that are actually got feed on the ground at the moment. At the end of the day, the money does get back to the farmers. That is the main thing.
What are you hearing from these drought-affected communities when you're sending those loads up?
A lot of them are in absolute dire straits. My phone rings constantly from 7 a.m. through to nearly 9 or 10 p.m. 7 days a week, with people ringing me up, finding out what we're up to, when we're going to be there. Down to my last bale, I've only got a day's worth of feed to go. How can you help? How do I get help? Is there anybody that can help? The best advice I can give them is to just keep talking, and we will get to you eventually. It's just we've been absolutely inundated with requests. Yeah, we're just trying to get on top of it ourselves.
It is one of the interesting challenges, isn't it? Almost, not quite, but almost too successful. On balance, though, probably a good problem to have. That's Need for Feed Western Victoria coordinator Adam Meek speaking with our reporter Jessica Black. It's 26 to 1. Time to get the latest in local news headlines now with Emma Field. Afternoon, Emma.
Afternoon. Making headlines, fire authorities will hold a community meeting at Benn River in East Gippsland today to advise residents about a big bushfire burning nearby. The fire, 3 kilometres north of Cape Conran, has burnt 850 hectares and has a perimeter of 19 kilometres. It started from an escaped burn-off on private land. The incident controller, Ben Rankin, says more than 100 firefighters hope to have the fire contained before strong winds hit tonight. Police are investigating an armed robbery in Mildura. 3 masked men used a firearm to threaten a female worker at a 15th Street service station about 2:30 this morning. A Bendigo advocate for parents whose children have an intellectual disability say work is needed to make the National Disability Insurance Scheme review process more manageable. The agency responsible for the scheme yesterday released its latest quarterly report, which has found 91% of participants feel NDIS planners are listening to their needs. But Nola Foreman from Quality Living Options says having their child's funding reassessed every year is frustrating because their intellectual disabilities will only worsen, not improve. A man in his 30s has been flown to the Alfred Hospital after his car rolled on a remote track in Gippsland. Emergency services were called to the crash accident on Snowdon's Road at Ballara South in the Strzelecki Ranges just before 8 o'clock this morning. Ambulance Victoria says the man has serious but not life-threatening back injuries. A fourth-generation Maryborough beekeeper who supplies honey to Capilano is welcoming a takeover bid for the company. Under the deal, prospective buyers Wattle Hill and Rock Partners will pay $190 million for the Australian business. Capilano's board has told shareholders to support the deal. Ken Gell says the region's beekeepers are optimistic about the state of the industry in central Victoria. And a small earthquake has been recorded at Hayfield in Gippsland this morning. Geoscience Australia says the magnitude 3 earthquake was felt about 6:20 this morning. For more news, head to our website abc.net.au/news.
Thank you very much, Emma Field, there with local news headlines. On the Country Hour this lunchtime, we've been talking about this US court decision recently. It has ruled that the weed killer glyphosate did cause one man's cancer, and Monsanto has now been ordered to pay millions of dollars in damages. Heaps of your texts coming through. We'll try to get to all of them. A lot really coming to the defence of glyphosate. One person says, I'd say that sugar is more dangerous than glyphosate. Gary says Roundup might cause cancer, or so might bacon. Another text saying if you wear protective clothing recommended on the label when handling the chemical, there's no problem. So it's not the chemical that is the problem, but how it's used. And another text saying, I thought the current advice on glyphosate was judicious use as weeds can develop a tolerance. This texter says that is becoming an issue. 0467 842 722 is the text number if you would like to join that conversation about glyphosate and whether or not its use should continue on in Australia. Lots of people so far saying that it should, but we'll also hear from a few in a moment that say it shouldn't. First, though, we need to head off to the Bureau of Meteorology. Rod Dixon is on duty. Afternoon, Rod.
Hi, Nikolai.
As we were hearing in news headlines, there's a bit of wind around and there's more on the way, I gather.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Pretty clear skies across most of Victoria. The only exception today is across the northeastern parts of the northern country, where the clouds lingered from overnight throughout the day today. So still mostly cloudy across the northeast, but plenty of sunshine for remaining parts of Victoria. And as you mentioned, northwesterly winds already starting to freshen up. We've seen winds gusting up to around 80 kilometres an hour through parts of the Grampians this morning. And we'll see those increase further throughout the afternoon and evening tonight, particularly over the southwest and central districts and also elevated parts of eastern Victoria. So likely to see some wind gusts up around the 90 kilometre an hour mark developing overnight tonight ahead of the next front, which will move into western Victoria in the early hours of Wednesday morning. Temperatures today, though, reaching generally up to the high teens in most areas, with 20 degrees expected across parts of Gippsland in Sale and Bairnsdale, even into the low 20s across the Mallee, up to 22 degrees in Mildura, 20 for Swan Hill. A little bit cooler underneath that cloud cover in the northeast, though, around 15 degrees expected in Albury-Wodonga and Wangaratta. As I mentioned, that front on the way will move into Western Victoria early Wednesday morning. And that'll be accompanied by a band of showers, which will move into the west overnight tonight and extend further eastwards during the day on Wednesday. And showers are most likely to be most widespread about the eastern ranges and southwest of the state. Rainfall totals across the southwest, probably around 5 millimetres, and around 5 to 15 millimetres across the northeast, and as much as 20 to 25 millimetres about the ranges, with some locally higher falls. But away from those areas, rainfall totals across southern and mountain areas are likely to be less than 2 to 5 millimetres. And East Gippsland and the northwest, unfortunately, not looking like seeing much more than a light shower or two with less than half a millimetre or so. But some snow developing down to around 1,000 metres as well. And it's probably cold and unstable enough for some local hail developing across the southwest Wednesday afternoon, and one or two thunderstorms about the coast as well. But conditions easing off towards Thursday as the showers will ease off. There's still scattered showers across the southwest coast and eastern ranges, but only a couple of millimetres expected. Just isolated light showers elsewhere, and once again remaining dry across East Gippsland and the northwest. On Friday, looks like it'll be a mostly fine start to the day. We'll see still showers across the eastern ranges to start the day, but generally fine elsewhere. But there is another front on the way, and that'll move into the west of Victoria on Friday night. Not quite as windy with that next front on Friday, but that'll increase the showers across the west of the state to during Friday night. And that'll spread eastwards over the weekend, and looks like the weekend's looking pretty cold and showery across Victoria, with fresh and gusty southwesterly winds maintaining showers across mainly southern and mountain areas, with more isolated shower activity across the north. But we could see some falls around 5 to 10 millimetres across southern and mountain areas both Sunday into Monday as well. And much cooler conditions. So we got temperatures in the teens, the high teens the next couple of days. But following those fronts around about the mid-teens, and by the weekend we're back to 12s and 13s. So a pretty wintry weekend. And then following that, depending on how fast the next high pressure system moves in, we're looking like pretty likely to get some frosts around the early part of next week as well.
Okay, thank you very much, Rod.
No worries, Nicolai.
Rod Dixon on duty at the Bureau of Meteorology. More of your texts coming through. I should say 1-2 on the news that need feed. The charity says it's now having to pay more for feed because they just can't track enough of it down. Old Codger says totally disgusted with the profiteering plonkers who are jacking the price of stock feed up. And more of your texts on glyphosate and how dangerous you perceive it to be, how necessary you perceive it to be. Anthony from the Millawa says glyphosate saving mallee soils from blowing away, that it's an essential part of no-till farming. Greg says we need to get rid of glyphosate altogether, go organic, go back to cultivating multiple times. We'll then get more nice red sunsets, and we need to cut down the remaining world's forests to get enough arable land. But that's okay, we'll have more wood. Presuming that's a bit tongue-in-cheek. Wally says cigarettes kill millions. They haven't banned them yet. Leave Roundup alone. And this one, I think, is a really interesting point from Grant. The glyphosate debate emphasises the discontent that consumers and the general public have with what's actually required to produce their food. Interesting point. 0467 842 722 is the text number. 0467 842 722.
The Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
Where it is 17 minutes to one. My name's Nicolai Bailharts. Well, a farmer from northern Victoria says that almost half of the region's dairy stock could be lost if conditions in the industry don't improve. The third generation dairy farmer from Katunga, north of Shep, is in the process of destocking and says that many of his neighbours are now doing the same.
Help! Help! Help!
My name is Rodney McCracken. We're on our dairy farm at Katunga in northern Victoria.
Our farm is 800 acres and we milk between 700 and 800 cows usually.
What has your experience been of late in dairy farming?
Oh, it's been tough for quite a few years now. Every year seems to be another challenge.
What do you think the biggest challenge is facing you? Is it milk prices? Is it water? Is it finding feed?
In the short term, it's feed. Fodder is going to be an issue for us definitely over the next 12 months or probably longer. Most of the fodder reserves have gone north to New South Wales and Queensland, and sourcing fodder is becoming more of a challenge every day.
What are you feeding your cows at the moment?
Wheat, silage, and a few other products, but mostly wheat and silage at the moment. We have our own silage. We are using that at the moment, but that won't continue forever. That will run out.
When do you think it'll run out?
Probably in the next 4 weeks. After that, we hope that you'll have a spring harvest after that.
Hope!
What are you hearing? What are the stories you're hearing from other dairy farmers?
A lot of uncertainty at the moment, Megan. No one really is sure what's going to happen over the next short period of time. Water has become unviable at $400 a megalitre, and grain prices are up to $400 a tonne now, so that's becoming unprofitable as well. And with feed reserves unviable, we're really not sure what we'll do in the future. We're in the process of culling cows at the moment.
Could have you ever imagined it would get to this point?
Droughts happen and we've just got to make the right decisions now. One of the first options in drought strategies is destock and reduce the amount of exposure. No farmer wants to see their animals suffer, and farmers are extremely professional people, and welfare is their main priority of their stock.
Can you give us an idea of how much you will be destocking and what you've heard from other farmers in the region that are at this point?
Most farmers will destock by at least 20%, and then you'll have another group of farmers that will stop producing milk full stop, and they will just destock 100%. So there could be a decrease in the amount of cows in the area by up to 50%, I predict.
And what does that mean for the industry?
It means that the industry will shrink. What that means going forward, who would know?
Who do you blame, or what do you blame for it getting to this?
It's pretty hard to blame anyone. I mean, weather is weather, and the New South Wales and Queensland farmers have been suffering for quite a while, and they've, in the last 6 months, have just been drawing down on our hay reserves and taking them up north just so they can survive. So we're all in it together now, and we just have to find a way through it the best we can.
Hope!
Cows are in very good condition. It's been an excellent winter for milking cows, and it's a shame that we'll have to destock. The cows that we're looking at selling next week are milking cows in early lactation, and the only reason they're being sold is because, one, we haven't got enough feed to feed them going forward, plus the only reason why they've been sold is because they didn't get in calf earlier than the others. So through no fault of their own, full production cows.
What needs to happen? Obviously we need rain. What else needs to happen?
What else needs to happen? There is another option. At the moment, water is hard to buy or purchase, although there is plenty out there. It's very expensive. The water market is unprofitable for most dairy farmers. Dairy farmers can't afford to compete at that price level. If there was more water available, farmers could actually grow their own feed instead of relying on brought-in feed from other people.
Where would that water come from?
There's one large water holder at the moment, and that's the environmental water holder, who has a large amount of water available at the moment, and that could be used to go back into the irrigation system. And in a way, the environmental water holders could be the hero out of this drought situation. Whoa, girls.
How do you think the dairy industry is faring at the moment compared to others?
The dairy industry is a bit low at the moment, but it will pick up. Dairy industries historically goes up and down, and this is a down cycle, and it will go up eventually, just a matter of time.
Walking away isn't an option yet for you?
Definitely not. No farmer would like to do that. We're dairy farmers, we love what we're doing, and this is our life. See the mountain ducks out there in the paddock?
Oh, yeah.
I reckon it's a sign things are going to get wet. But you don't know. Who knows?
Have you ever seen them before and it has rained?
Oh, they do come in. I reckon they come in when it's wetter. Whoa, girls.
Oh, fingers crossed. Sometimes those are positive little signs. Those mountain ducks might mean a bit more rain on the way. Dairy farmer Rodney McCracken speaking with Megan Ruth at his property near Katunga. And if just a few more of your texts on glyphosate to round up that conversation. One person says, I managed a farm for an investor who was happy to help when busy. I asked if he could weed kill one day and he refused if it was using Roundup. What's interesting was he was actively involved with cancer research. I'll never forget it. And this text, this is, that was in 2004. And Jeff says, g'day Nick, sounds like if there was no Roundup, we'd all be dead from starvation. 0467 842 722 is the text number.
You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio Victoria.
Word is 10 minutes to one. My name's Nikolai Bailharts. We're changing tack a bit. Young fashion designers say that the more and more consumers are caring about sustainability and what kinds of materials that their clothes are actually made out of. A number of fashion students recently gathered at the Collingwood CWA branch meeting to talk about the role of sustainability in fashion and what role materials like wool play in the fashion world. Marley Downer is one of them. She's an honours student at RMIT University.
It was a combination of Collingwood CWA, the Collingwood Children's Farm, and three students from RMIT studying fashion design. It's our first barn yarn. The Collingwood CWA and the Children's Farm have wanted to create a closer partnership, and so we thought it'd be great to have talks within the barn around the fire on a Sunday afternoon over scones and cups of tea and just really creating a great community atmosphere, which we felt like definitely happened on Sunday. Well, I did, definitely.
And so the focus was fashion, is that right?
Yeah. So we were through this degree, we've looked at elements of sustainability within our classes and studios, and we thought that would be a great starting topic point for our first barn yarn. And it was really received well. We had a lot of great questions and we just spoke about our projects and how through this course we've become more conscious about how we design and what materials we use.
Why is that important to you?
I think it's because from the industry you can just see how much waste goes in, and to be sustainable it's so difficult because there's just so much plastic, and it's so in much emotion, and our consumption is just at a ridiculous rate, and I think there's a real need to change that.
And how could that be done?
I think we just need to be more conscious and care about what we buy, the quality of the clothing we buy, so the materials, buying natural fibres, wool is really great. And also just as designers, we have a role about how we make the clothes. Like there's a lot of tricks and design methods that we can implement to ensure that we're wasting less.
And so when you're talking about sustainability, what kind of materials, I guess, or methods are you talking about? You mentioned wool being, so is that one of the big ones?
Yeah, definitely. And sourcing sustainably grown linens and things like that. And there's methods such as no waste. So with the pattern pieces you make, you try and make them so they don't have as many remnants left over. And just being clever, I think, is the way forward in a sense.
Is it something that you think consumers want to see? I mean, do consumers care about whether clothing is sustainable?
Well, I hope so. I think that's definitely what we are trying to push. I think that's a big part that RMIT is getting us to do this semester, is looking at how we communicate our work to really tell that story. So I focus a lot on craft, which is why I've joined the CWA, because I believe in crafting things out of wool, out of raffia, out of linen, that you create value, and using quality products you create value too, because there's that, I don't know, heaviness and beauty in the products that you're making. And if I communicate that better, hopefully people will start to care. And I think it's how you communicate the story of what you're doing to create care.
And so what kind of questions came up on Sunday night? What did people want to know about?
Yeah, definitely. So they kind of asked how that can they be more sustainable with buying. And I think it definitely comes down to reading the tags that you buy, like taking that just extra time to look at where it's made or where what materials, what fibres the garment's produced by, and yeah, how. I think if we make clothes that actually tells those who are consuming the clothes too more about the garment, I think that would help them to understand a bit more, and it's creating that knowledge within everyone so they can be more sustainable, definitely.
Now, I don't profess to not know a whole lot about fashion, but I guess one of the things you hear quite often is that it's a very, I guess, finicky industry, you know, that trends come and go quite quickly.
Yeah.
Do you think sustainability is a trend that is a long-term thing? Do you think people will continue to care about it?
I really hope so. I do. I think because it's not just like a colour pink, you know. Sustainability is something that is important, I guess, and something that we need to do in order to make this problem that we've got, a way to face it, I guess. Mm. So it's not just as easy as saying, oh, it's a long sleeve, bell shaped black top that's in trend at the moment. It's a bit more of an important issue that we're looking at. So that's why I think it's a trend to stay.
Marley Downer, an honours student at RMIT University.
$60, $70, $50, $60, thank you.
Off to the livestock market, starting at Shepparton with Nicole Varley.
Good afternoon. Well, we had 1,050 exports and 450 trade cattle yarded. Amongst the exports, 700 were cows. Some new faces back at the rails this week as two additional exporters returned, sparking greater competition across the increased numbers of grind steers and bullock categories. Large lines of Friesian steers were also penned, with their heavier end attracting stronger demand to sell at dearer rates. Majority of the cows offered were dairy. The trade cattle tell the usual story of two extremes in quality. The best of the vealers made to 320 with good calf scarce. Supplementary fed portion for the yearling steers dropped at 324. The bulk of the yearling steers ranging from 288 to 313. The finished sea-muscled yearling heifers sold at slightly better prices, ranging from 261 to 296 cents. 400 to 500 kilo steers, 287 to 298. The 500 to 600 kilo steers, 288 to 311, averaging around 302. 600 kilo plus bullocks to 291. Friesian steers over 540 kilos to 246 cents to sell at dearer rates, while the lighter weighted Friesian yearling steers struggled to sell. The beef cows made from 178 to 240, and dairy cows 170 to 206. This is Nicole Varley from Shepparton.
Thanks, Nicole. Now to Ballarat and Graham Palmer.
Good afternoon, everyone. Lamb numbers dropped a little to 8,400 at Ballarat this week. Quality was average to good, with the usual buying group in attendance and operating in a dearer market on the better quality lambs. They sold $5 to $10 a head stronger on last week. Heavy lambs made to 270, and the heavier trade weight sold from 184 to 240, to average around 850 cents. Quality trade weight new season young lamb sold to $226. Merino lamb sold to 158. Restockers paid to 137 for ewe lambs, and lighter lambs sold from 56 to 65.20. There were 4,250 sheep yarded. Numbers are up a little on last week. Sheep sold to an easier trend on the lighter and heavier sheep, with a medium weight selling around firm. Tradeway's three-score lamb sold from 141 to 176, to average around 780. Export three- and four-score lamb sold from 226 to 251. Extra-heavy export lambs made from 260 to 270. Medium-weight sheep sold from 59 to 120, with a run of merino mutton averaging around 400 cents. Heavy hoggets made to 179, and rams made to 116. Been Graham Pyman, Ballarat from LA.
Thanks, Graham. And now to Graham at Wodonga. This is Graham Richard.
Numbers were back with just under 800 head penned. The quality was good, with plenty of young cattle off the crop and pellets. Yearlings made up the bulk of the yarding. Feeders were in short supply. Prime heavy-grown steers and heifers still remained limited. Heavy butcher vealers sold from 281 to 298. Feeder steers fell 12, mostly breed-related, to 25 to 288. Feeder heifers fell 20, also breed-related, to 12 to 274. Trade cattle were firm, with the odd sale a little bit dearer, with the medium and heavy trades steers 270 to 310, trade heifers 248 to 298. Prime grown steers and bullocks 250 to 290, and heavy grown heifers reached 270. This has been Graham Richard, for the MLA.
Thanks, Graham. Now let's find out what's coming up on Statewide Drive. Afternoon, Nicole Travastic.
How are you doing?
Good.
The PM triumphant as the National Energy Guarantee is overwhelmingly passed by the party room. But will it get passed by Victoria? Josh Frydenberg, the Energy Minister, is now demanding Daniel Andrews sign up before his government goes into caretaker mode. And there's also been a rush on MPs' offices around Australia from voters wanting a portrait of the Queen, Nick.
I had heard this, yes.
Australians, it transpires, are entitled to request nationhood material from their federal MPs under the Parliamentary Entitlements Act. So I'd love to know what sort of nationhood material you'd like to request from your local MP, Nick. Maybe a little stuffed koala?
The great question of whether or not it's being done ironically, I think, too. There's some people saying it's all being done a bit tongue-in-cheek.
It is indeed.
So, okay, very interesting. That and plenty more on Statewide Drive from 3 o'clock here on ABC Radio Victoria. It's time for the news. It is 1 o'clock.